Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Welcome to the Sift Spoil. We are going to look at all the hanging threads, romances, jokes, Easter eggs, cameos, deaths, resurrections, and post-credit sequences.
They all die.
For Knock at the Cabin. Almost all of them die.
Yeah.
Let's chat a little bit about the things we had to chat around. Do either of you have anywhere you want to start? That is just knocking on your door, just like, I need to talk about this. Andrew, where do you want to start?
So I think that one of the biggest missed opportunities for this movie was to kill Rupert Grint off at the very beginning.
Just because he was so good?
Yes, he was also really good, but I think that it was a missed opportunity in the sense that it would have been really interesting if the final person to try and convince, you know, Andrew and Ben of what's going on had to be the one who, you know, persecuted. And it would have been like, The bigger man has to come out on top to accept a reality, and he has to accept it from this person. But that was just what I thought was
interesting.
I really thought that was what the movie was going to lead towards. And whenever he was the first one offed, I was like, oh, okay. Because I thought he was going to come back, because they started bringing up, like, I think that was the guy from my past who hit me over the head with a bottle. I also like the fact we don't actually see Rupert Grint's face as the one who hits him with the bottle, because he's covered up with the hat. So there is that little bit of doubt.
Yeah.
Well, until he gets the ID out of his wallet.
Right. Which I think is why it's structured the way it's structured, for a couple of reasons. Number one, I think we're dealing with the ability for our main characters, our main family, to try to convince the others of who he was without the added obviousness of somebody in the room actually, you know, having the answer or having to play dumb or whatever. So there's an element of this movie is a lot about what do you believe to be true based on what your eyes tell you. And in that case, it would have been based on what you can get out of somebody who knows the answer, which is a little different than, you know, what the movie was trying to do. The second part of this is all my opinion. The second part of that, I think, has to do with the idea of the reveal and where it was going to happen and how it was going to happen and those kind of things. So I think in M. Night's mind, it probably structurally made more sense that way. Although I think that idea is interesting. I mean, you certainly could have had different kinds of conversations, you know, in that way.
Yeah.
So, but I also don't know, and maybe I'm wrong, but I don't know that the homophobic plot line was meant to be the centerpiece of the message or metaphor. I think it was part of the character in the backstory and those kind of things, but I don't know that it was meant to be the centerpiece of what we're supposed to leave considering or thinking about. So, which I kind of like that it's, you know, that it's a gay couple isn't like the center thing, but their backstory and their persecution definitely impacts who they are as characters, but it's not necessarily what the movie
But it also, don't forget, it also adds their own biases and opinions on their views on humanity, because
correct,
the rest of humanity throughout their entire lives has persecuted them. So giving them the chance to save humanity, the ones who have been, you know, disdained and exiled, you know, in some cases, I think that that adds to the intensity and the profoundness of the situation.
Yeah. Ian, anywhere you want to go before I jump in with some things?
So Jonathan Groff is Jesus. Let's just get it out there.
But I think the movie is questioning that. I think the movie is questioning the idea of, are we Jesus? Like, I think there is an element of who is God, who is not, and the idea of self-sacrifice is an interesting one, you know, because in this case, it could be very easily argued that from a truly, at least, again, interpretive view of what Jesus said, was that, that his sacrifice as God was so that, you know, we didn't have to bear the weight of that. So the idea that, you know, in that literal situation, there is a strong case to be made that the correct answer is, even if the world is ending, we should not kill each other. There's a very strong case that, that maybe what M. Night is saying here is, the question is, I think the predominant moral ethical question he's trying to deal with is, would you kill someone you loved if you knew it saved the entire world, right? I think that's the thing he wants us to wrestle with. I'm not sure we're supposed to come away saying the answer is yes. That's what I'm still wrestling with, because he is not Jesus in a literal sense. He is not God in a literal sense. And so if the answer is that the work has already been done, then that's a different kind of an angle on what's going on here. I think that maybe my own layer I'm putting over it. I don't know that that's intended, but it's definitely something. It's something I've been thinking about. So
I'll say my biggest spoilery thing where the movie got me was just on a practical level. I said in the show that how the protagonist didn't have a choice. They aren't given enough information to go on to make this a choice at all. There is no way from Rupert Grint's, before Rupert Grint's death, that anybody is sacracrificing anybody. And all the way up until the end,
sure.
The only time there is a smidgen of a chance that I believe is it Andrew?
Yes.
Andy? Andrew?
Yes.
I know you're Andrew.
No, I know what you're saying. The character's name is Andrew. Okay.
You thought Andrew was like, yes, that's my name. Yes, that's my name. You've got that right. You're here.
It's the only time I believe...
What do you want from me? What do you want from me?
The only time I believe he may go along with it and sacrifice somebody is when Batista starts mouthing along with the news report. And I had to stop myself from bursting out laughing, because I was like, dude, my man, why didn't you lead with that? If you can do that...
Well, because he didn't know everything else.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
In the movie,
his vision was specifically that news report.
Yeah.
That was all he knew.
Yeah,
but the first person knew. That's so convenient, my goodness.
Let me explain. So, what the movie is saying is each of them had a vision of something, and then throughout the time of before and when they were being sacrificed, they would have proof of that vision.
Right.
So Rupert had a vision.
But carry on with your overall thought, which was that was the first time that they literally had logical, reasonable evidence that they couldn't assign doubt to. They couldn't figure out how to doubt it, you know.
And I know that's the idea of faith. I know, and it's the thing that I don't like. It's the leap of faith. It's like the default assumption here is that perhaps the right thing to do is to take a leap of faith. And it isn't the reason that all of this works is because you have to take it on faith. And for me, that's where danger and insanity lies.
It's distasteful. As a person of faith, I believe that to be distasteful. I believe this idea that that you have to do something because somebody believes it enough is really scary. It's led to a lot of scary places.
Exactly. It's my single biggest problem.
Because I agree.
Where I wanted the story to spin, and I don't know how it could have pulled this off, but if the four horse people of the apocalypse were wrong, and this was a cult, and this was mm-hmm. on a message board, and the message of the movie is that groupthink and our ability to delude ourselves and to see patterns where there are none mm-hmm. has led to them kidnapping this family and putting them through hell. And the apocalypse is completely beside the point. It's all stuff that's happening, but it's not the message the movie wanted to put across. And for me, that's way more powerful and way more interesting, because we do the dangerous thing already. We find the conspiracies. We lead without enough logic and let our fears push us. We already do that. I don't need another movie telling me that it's the way through.
It is interesting you say another movie, because I do think we are to a place where this is the movie that's subverting the norm. Like, the norm would be, I think, what you're talking about now. Like, I think, you know, now most movies, that would be the mess. Like, that would be where we end up going.
Do you think?
I think in most movies now, the ending is how you would want it. Like, that's the version of whatever that movie is, ends with the idea that, you know, that groupthink and those kind of things. I mean, terrible movie, but look at how the Halloween franchise, what it's trying to say about groupthink and persecution and those kind of things. I just think movies are more attuned to the idea that this is dangerous and this is, you know.
I hope I'm wrong about that. That leap of faith thing is the thing that just triggered me a lot. I just felt like I see it a lot.
I think, go ahead, Andrew. It looks like you want to say something.
Oh, I was going to say, I was looking up articles and stuff on this movie before the show started. And there was a really interesting one that it didn't click with me until I read it. Maybe you guys knew it already. But not only are these four people, you know, to represent the four horsemen of the apocalypse, they're also supposed to represent the four tenets of humanity.
Correct.
Yeah, you have Dave Bautista.
Well, but the movie spells that out, doesn't it?
Like, yes, that's, it does.
I didn't pick up on that.
Though.
Oh, like, man, that scene annoyed me so much when it was like, yeah, no, I guess they were the four horse people of the apocalypse. And it spoon feeds me its own message, and I think that's probably where checked out.
Sure. Yeah, they come straight out and say that they're the four horsemen of the apocalypse. They say that in the movie. But like the four tenets, like guidance.
Well, what's his name figures it out. The religious person of or the
yeah,
formerly
he spells
religious.
It out. He says what Rupert Grint is, what Bautista is, like the nurture, mm-hmm. the malice, yeah. All of that.
Yeah. So maybe I just didn't remember that part, but I didn't remember him saying that, so I thought
talking in the cinema really loudly and having an argument, and it distracted you.
Maybe. Who knows? Maybe they were talking so loud in your theater that
you could hear it yesterday.
And it was ruining mine yesterday.
Yeah.
So. I think here's what I will say about the message and theme that I had to talk around during the main show with the grasshoppers is this idea of God, the idea of God being a being that experiments on humanity, a kind being, sure, like the little girl, she's kind. She's talking to these grasshoppers saying, you know, oh, I'm just going to put you in here a little bit because I want to learn something. I want to learn, you know, something from you. And then I promise I'll let you out. And that the cabin is the glass bottle, right? The cabin is God's version of the glass bottle. And he's saying, I'm going to put you in this position for a little bit, and then everything's going to be okay. I'm going to let you out. It's, you know, going to be okay.
I'm going to let two of you out, maybe.
What's that?
I'm going to let two of you out, maybe.
Well, and this is the wrestling I wonder if the movie is wanting us to do. Is this the kind of God you think is a good God? Like, is this the kind, if you believe in an overall arching energy, however you want it, whether it's Christianity or whatever you want to call it, if you believe in a powerful being outside of us who is in control or omniscient or omnipotent or whatever you want to talk about, is this the kind of God that you think is good who would say, you know, Abraham, sacrifice your son Isaac? you know, so that the world
psych,
or in that case, it was psych, or the god who says, I'm going to become a human who is also myself, but is also my son, and I'm going to let you kill him so that everybody can, like, is it what, you know, the wrestling with the idea of self-sacrifice, is it good? Like, is it something that makes sense in a big way? And I think there's some interesting layers woven through that about faith, about belief, about what it is, about what it means to have reasonable faith or deconstruct your faith or be willing to think deeply. Because you're dealing with a character who has deconstructed their faith in a way with their partner who doesn't subscribe to the same faith. And then the tables turn where now the person who has deconstructed their faith has to convince the person who doesn't have faith that, you know, there is logic and reason behind what they're seeing, right? So it's like turning those tables in a way to go, are we always willing to look at new information and make new decisions? And that's really interesting to me. You know, and I don't know if this is what the movie is wanting us to wrestle with. I just know I had a lot of those thoughts coming out of the movie and, mm-hmm. and thinking about my own faith, my own deconstruction of my faith, all those things. And what does that look like? And what is positive from that? What is negative? What are things that we apply to the idea of God? What are things that we see in the world around us that are reasonable? All of that. It's really interesting because at the end of the day, the thing that I always come down to is we all live on some sort of faith, and that's just because none of us are omniscient, right? Without omniscience, you have to take the things you see as real or the things you feel as real or, you know, whatever the case may be. We all have, you know, little elements of faith in our lives, and the question then becomes, how do you protect yourself from groupthink? How do you protect yourself from the idea of indoctrination or those kind of things, you know? I think that's really interesting stuff to think about. And I think it's all kind of here under the surface, if not explicit in some of the things that are going on. I fully believe I may be adding a lot of that to it.
I'm right there with you.
I think that there is a, if I have to take it on its surface, I think it is that typical, self-sacrifice kind of idea. But I do think it wants to be a conundrum movie. I think it wants to be the kind of movie where you walk away going, if I were such and such a character, what would I do? Right? If I were the non-believer faced with this evidence, Would I put aside, you know, my idea of what is, you know, that visions aren't real, these, you know, whatever these kind of things. If I'm faced with what looks like hardcore evidence that visions actually happened and I can't figure out, you know, how the trick is done, you know, so to speak, do I process that? What do I do? If I'm a scientist and I'm looking at new information that proves that visions might be real, well, then as a scientist, you go, okay, awesome. Let's repeat this. let's find a way to describe this, to figure this out, you know, to what's happening here. I find that intellectual exercise really interesting, what these characters are doing. And then you add on top of that, we are all grasshoppers in God's glass encasing, and you go, okay, what are you trying? Is that what you're trying to say? And what are you saying by that?
Take it a step further than that, Aaron. You were talking about, is God omnipotent or is he cruel or is he, you know, what if
indifferent,
God? Yeah, scarily. What indifferent? What if God is a little girl with a glass jar,
right?
And she just doesn't know what she's doing, like the. Like for some, like on her level, there is no ramifications, but if you shrink it down to us, there are massive implications. So,
yeah,
you could dissect a lot with this movie.
I think so. I don't know. In at the end of the day, I guess that's why I say I like what M. Night's doing. I like that he's clearly trying to work out some things, clearly trying to think deeply about some things. Again, I think he's a great filmmaker, so I buy into all that stuff. But yeah, it is clearly a distasteful message on its surface to me. And that's something I'm figuring out how to wrestle with. Because if that is actually the intended message, then I don't know that I like the movie that much, because it doesn't say something as meaningful to me if there's nothing underneath that. So
I would love to watch this movie with your brain. I genuinely would, because sure. my cynical brain has, and it's hard because I like his movies, and I think it's so obvious that he does deep thematic work in all of his movies. Like, things aren't accidental. Mm-hmm. So for me to come out of this disappointed that this is a very simplistic viewpoint, I think I'm wrong. I think I am wrong. But I also know what I experienced. I also know the movie that I watched. And that's really hard. But it's just, I really struggle to get past the really two-dimensional presentation of the skeptic versus the believer. And the skeptic is a bit of a git, and the believer was right all along. It's a hard angle for me to.
I feel like the believer had to come around as well, though. I like, you know.
No, I agree, and I don't like the way they came around to it.
Right. Like, no, I understand that. I understand that.
I think
that's purposeful. I think that the idea of Jesus in the light, like that's a really abstract thing that purposefully again plays into the message of what do you see? How do you know what you see is true? How do you choose to believe things that you see that maybe others don't? Like there's this idea of how do you choose faith? What do you choose to put faith in?
And I think that's where I get tripped up, because I don't see it as I almost don't see it as a choice. It's not something. You don't have to choose.
You
follow the evidence, and you follow. There is not enough evidence there to make the decision that they make at the end, and we fill in the gaps with faith and belief. Just at my gut core level, that belittles the work that you've done building the evidence and finding the evidence and doing the work. If you have to fill in the gaps with
but that is science, right? Like, I mean, like there's science isn't omnipotent.
So there
is always that idea of filling in the gaps or changing your mind when you find new information, you know, like that's.
But filling in that gap doesn't lead to me killing my husband.
Correct. Thank you. Distasteful part. I totally agree. Yeah. I totally agree. That is certainly something I would agree with. So one last thing I want to talk about. I don't mean to cut us off, but we've talked a long time. But the only other thing I wanted to mention is, did you at all resonate with or tune into, for lack of a better term, the radio ending? The idea of the song that they used to love to sing as a family is on the radio, and he immediately turns it off, which would be a natural human reaction. His daughter then is like, actually, we should listen to it, turns it on, sees the reaction of her dad, turns it back off, and then he decides, you know what, let's listen to it, and they drive off. I kind of love it. Everything that it's saying and doing there, I'm just kind of like, that's a really interesting, beautiful way to end this movie. I don't think it has a lot to do with the overall message or themes, but I think there's something interesting happening there with an idea of, you know, grief and mourning.
Yeah. How do we process it? Still find joy.
So
I got it. Yeah.
I thought it was really well done.
It wasn't lost on me, but it was, it's a perfectly fine way to end in the movie that I didn't like. It had lost me by that point. I was so angry at everybody.
that's so unfortunate, Ian. I hate it whenever I find myself in that situation. I wouldn't wish it on anybody.
For sure.
Also, this movie doesn't have a twist. No Shyamalan twist.
I mean, it kind of does, but it's just the one you're expecting. Well, the twist is that they're right. That it is linked to the apocalypse.
Okay, well then that's what I don't like about this movie, is that I knew they were right from the very beginning, because it's a Shyamalan
movie. I don't know that we're supposed to know.
I'm the odd man out on that one. I did not know the movie was ending that way. So I wouldn't call it a twist, though. Not in the sense of, but I hate that word anyway. It's become so, there's so much baggage with that word. Yeah. I,
but come
I,
on,
I
like it's these... a Shyamalan movie. It's not like you can't.
I know.
And he does own it.
I understand. But no, I definitely, up until the diner, I was still wondering if, you know, we were going to find out. Like if, you know, up until he's going through their bags and finding the proof that they were who they said they were, I still wondered if we were going to end up at their compound looking at how they'd practiced and, you know, but whatever. Like, I still thought that was a possibility.
But before he kills Eric, don't we see them both go outside and see planes falling out of the sky and lightning and fire and everything?
Yeah, so it could
they
be a coincidence.
Knew, they, yeah, but that could be a terrorist attack.
That could be
attack.
A coincidence.
Exactly.
Yeah, it could no, be no, a terrorist no, they, attack. Yeah. Like, that's what we're supposed to believe. That's what the movie's telling me, at least, is that there is a world where they did a terrorist attack on planes before they came mm-hmm. here that would go at a certain time and knock all the planes out of the
700
sky.
700 planes?
They say it. Yeah. They literally say it in the movie. They literally say coordinated terrorist attack in the movie. So like it's definitely something the movie puts out there. But yeah.
Okay.
So on the movie's own terms, I believe we're supposed to come to the end not quite knowing until we see the absolute proof.
Well, that did not work.
All of the marketing absolutely says that. I know you wouldn't have seen the trailer, but it's like, it keeps you guessing until the final second. I'm like, I'm not even going to blame M. Night for
so
that.
So apparently... marketing is marketing. But apparently the ending is different than the ending of the book. And I don't know. I should have looked up how the book ends. Do you know
the
how
ending
the book
is,
ends?
The ending of the book is we still don't know.
Oh, okay. It's open-ended. It's ambiguous.
Yeah.
I would have hated that even more.
Actually, me too. Actually, yeah. I would I like that there's a finality to it because I think it makes you wrestle even harder.
It frames the discussion better.
Right.
I agree with you guys because I look at all my books that have that ambiguous ending, like The
Coward.
Mist. Like what?
Like You Coward to the author.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, even Stephen King, you know, you look at The Mist in the story of The Mist, it ends with them driving off, and we don't know if they ever make it to safety or not. It's just ambiguous. The movie definitely, you know, whether you
this movie could have had very much a Mist type ending. That is one of the possibilities. At least it was for me, not for you guys. You guys knew exactly what was going to happen the entire time.
Aaron, since the last time I saw you, I know you've tried to catch like a 4 trillion movies during awards season, but I don't know if you ever got a chance to see Take Shelter. This movie could remind you very much of Take Shelter.
There you go. So well, thank you guys, thanks for listening to the Sif Spoil. We actually remembered to do it, so congratulations to us and our memories after 2 hours of recording. We love you guys, and we'll catch you on the next time we need to spoil something for you.
Bye.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.